And welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer, where we equip churches to move from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Revitalize and Replant is brought to you by the North American Mission Board.
Do some churches really choose to die? On the surface, you say, of course not. Nobody chooses to die. No church chooses to die. But by the decisions we make or don't make, sometimes we do choose to die. I am joined by Mark Clifton, and we're going to talk about this whole thing about churches dying. Is there really volitional behavior in here? Do they really choose to? As always, thank you, North American Mission Board, for sponsoring Revitalize and Replant. 1 out of 10 churches in North America are at the risk of closing. North American Mission Board has a clear mission. We want to plant churches so that we will have increased the birth rate, and we want to help dying and hurting and struggling churches to get healthy. And so that is their mission in both of them. You can find out more about them. The North American Mission Board and churchreplanters.com are our sponsors. And just go to churchreplanters.com to get a lot of good information and a lot of resources. Mark, I'm going to open with a story. And for those who are listening to this in the context of a single episode, you would have no idea that I just got through telling a story in the other episode, and I'm not usually the storyteller.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
There's not room in this podcast for two storytellers.
Yes.
Or we'd have to turn him into a miniseries.
Ooh. I'll think about that. Okay. I'll think about that later. So this is a story, and it's a story that opens in a book, my most recent book, called Anatomy of a Revived Church.
By the way.
Yes.
Excellent book. I've said this publicly on many occasions. And for me personally, it's the best book you've written.
Wow.
For me personally. Just awesome. I mean, really, Autopsy of a Dying Church. I mean, wow. I mean, that's perfect for really pointing out the problems, right?
Right.
But this one points out the solutions.
Yep.
And
well, thank you for that.
Just wonderful. I really have embraced it, and I love it.
Well, I appreciate your saying that because I tell a story in there. And the story begins, I'm at a conference, and a man comes up to me at the break. You know how people talk to you during breaks?
Right.
Usually there's a line, yes. You know, and this person's going to dominate for a long time.
I know. And sometimes you see the line, just people finally realize, okay, I'm never going to get it. They just wander off.
He's oblivious to the fact that there are other people.
Same guy's been to my meetings.
Well, this guy was not one of those guys.
Okay.
He was not one. But he came up to me, Mark, and he said, "You were too late." And his words were referring to a book you just mentioned, Autopsy of a Deceased Church.
Right.
And it didn't take me long to realize that his church had already died. And later, after the conference was over and we had time to talk, he started crying. I mean, I'm a man of almost 65 years old, and he was probably 10 years my senior. And he looked like just a very stoic guy, but he just started crying. And it made me realize how much he loved the church that no longer existed, that particular address of a church that no longer existed. He said, "You were late," and he was talking about Autopsy, a book that I wrote, Autopsy of a Deceased Church. And I thought that he was saying he wished he had had it in his hands earlier so he could see the signs. But what he ended up saying was, "I needed to write a prequel to it."
Okay.
And he suggested, "Before the autopsy." I don't think so.
Before the autopsy. That's sort of like the autopsy's inevitable,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. Get ready to be cut on, but you won't feel a thing because you're dead. And so I did not go with that, but he did inspire me to write the prequel,
wow,
which is now Anatomy of a Revived Church. What happened to churches that haven't been autopsied because they're still alive?
That's great.
So that's the story behind that. One of the themes that is in Anatomy of Revived Church is change or die.
Right.
And when you don't make the decision to change, oftentimes you're making the decision to die.
So turn up the radio. I know you're not listening to a radio, but it just sounds better. Turn up the radio and listen to 5 reasons why churches die.
Reason number one, they're not willing to accept the normal pain of change.
They're not willing to accept any pain.
Okay.
Okay, they're going to avoid pain at all costs. And once you begin to make decisions based on the avoidance of pain, you're probably going to die.
That's a good point.
You know, really. It's like, well, that's going to hurt too much. Well, that's out of our comfort zone. Well, we don't want to do that. Man, once that rather than making decisions based on what Jesus wants this church to be, how we're going to reach other people, how we're going to grow in our faith, how we're going to be edified, no, how we're going to take care of ourselves, how we matter, what we want, what our comforts are, what our familiarity is, and the cost and pain of change is just too high. And when that happens, and I see it and you see it all across North America.
Absolutely.
I think I like to use Lyle Schaller once a day when we talk about podcasts. I think it was Lyle Schaller. I can't be for sure.
Lyle Schaller is like Charles Spurgeon.
He is.
You can always quote him.
He wrote so much and said so much, and he's passed away. So he's not here to refute it.
Just like Charles Spurgeon.
But I think Lyle Schaller said, the church in North America is going to die in a velvet coffin. In other words, we're going to make ourselves comfortable before we die.
Wow.
And I think that's what we do.
You know what I regret?
What?
I regret that when I did away with my library of thousands upon thousands of books, that my three parasitic sons...
they took them. Huh?
They took them. They started off, one would pick out a book, another one would pick out a book. But it was going to take days that way. So they sped up the process. I had the entire library of Lyle Schaller.
Did you really?
And it was 90-plus books, I recall correctly.
Everything he wrote.
Everything. And I may just rebuild that sucker.
You know, that would be a good idea. I may do that, too. Come to think of that. I mean, if you're a church consultant or a wannabe church consultant or you'd like to consult churches and you don't know who Lyle Schaller is.
He's the dean of church consulting.
Shame on you, man. You need to read Lyle Schaller.
He even wrote a book on church consulting called The Interventionist.
I know. The Interventionist is absolutely... It's foundational for anybody who works with churches.
There are reasons that Lyle Schaller is not known by many in our circles, Mark. One, he was writing for mainline churches who were the dying churches at the time.
That's right. Methodist and...
The PCUSA, some Lutherans.
Disciples of Christ.
Yes. So he was in that circle, and he was not recognized by evangelicals. Another reason was his vocation before he started writing this book was a city planner. So in folks didn't give him the cred.
My wife is a city planner, so that's kind of a cool. But she doesn't write books on church revitalization.
And he didn't use those type of topics. And if you have definitely read Lyle Schaller, he writes in run-ons. It's just, I mean, he writes like
I talk.
Like you talk, exactly. It's just, was there a comma there? We know there wasn't a period. And so some people did not like his writing style, but if you take time to read his books,
yes,
I mean, some of his books on change were way ahead of their time.
Right.
Ahead of their time.
Right.
I didn't know this was going to be a fish thrill for Lyle Schaller, but he talks about the pain of change. And his book on change, I cannot remember the specific title, but you can go to Amazon and put change in Lyle Schaller, and you'll see it is just absolutely one of the best. So
yeah.
I make recreate that library. All right, number two, they don't want to lose control. How many times does Mark Clifton talk about resisting losing control?
And you know why they don't want to lose control? It's not because they love the monthly business meeting. It's not because they love to be the chairman of the finance team. It's because everything else in our world seems to be out of control.
That's a good point.
And we can't...
And we're recording this in the midst of the peak hype of the coronavirus.
Yeah, right. At the very height of it.
Yeah.
But even for older adults, even things like their health... Right? Every morning they wake up and what do? They check every mole. They check every age spot. Does this need to be looked at by a doctor? You know, my blood pressure, my respiration, my blood sugar, my cholesterol. Things they can't, you know, they can try to control them with medicine. They can try to control them with diet. But at the same time, they know they go to the doctor. That's all a result of the fall. We're all dying. You know, our bodies are dying. Their children have moved away. Their grandchildren don't come back as often as they want. Their careers are no longer there. Maybe the companies they work for are no longer there. Maybe even the actual jobs they had no longer exist.
That's so true.
The television programs they liked are long gone. Even how they watch TV.
You can find a streaming service that has them somewhere, though.
I mean, yeah, how do they even find a streaming service? What do they do? How do they want to? I was at a major retailer.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by for story time.
I was at a major retailer the other day, and at the end aisle case, this was an electronics retailer, was something brand new. It was huge flip phones. I mean, huge, like bigger than an iPhone, flip phone. And you opened it up, and it had great big numbers, like a preschool children's telephone, right? And it was for older adults.
And where's that on sale?
I know, I'm going right, we're done. And it's like, I'm thinking like that, and I go, that looks silly, but you know what? I could see myself, and certainly my parents have passed away recently, but prior to that, it was always hard for my parents to use a cell phone. My mother would always hit two buttons at once and things like that. And so even making a phone call is difficult sometimes for senior adults, you know, given our technology and the iPhone and all that kind of thing. But man, they can go into that church, right? And it's just like it always was.
Yep.
And that sense of control. So what reason they don't want to give up control is because everything in their life seems out of control. Go back 150 years, it wouldn't have
My
been.
My birth?
Yeah, it wouldn't have been that way. 150 years ago, you know, they went to work where they always did. They lived in the house where they always did.
Things didn't change.
So the church doesn't change. And so I just want folks to realize that when they don't want to give up control, it's much of it is a result of everything else going on in their life, and they're feeling out of control. And so that's what we're looking at. And Satan has used that, obviously, to make them hang on tighter than they should.
Number three, they sometimes confuse tradition with doctrine. So there are things that they say, if you do it a wrong way, for example, how you serve the Lord's Supper becomes in their minds doctrinal, but it's really traditional.
Exactly.
If you want to do it like Scripture do it, you do away with the chairs, you get a big loaf of unleavened bread, and you go get some strong wine and drink the common cup, regardless of coronavirus.
Yeah, and we do make our traditions into doctrine, and we take, I mean, not even secondary issues, but tertiary issues and whatever the fourth one is.
Quadriary.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I knew you would know that. We take those things and we move them to the level of doctrine. And that is a problem. And we see it all the time. I mean, even things like, you know, we joke about it, but it's true. The baptistry painting is in our churches that have baptistries, you know, by immersion. And they always have, a lot of them have a painting of a river behind it with trees.
Never seen that, Mark.
Yeah, and sometimes there's a little squirrel up in the tree, and it's like, where's Waldo? During the sermon, you kind of look at the painting if you get bored to try to pick everything out. But you try to cover that up or paint over it.
Oh, wow.
That
becomes heresy instead of change.
Right, and when you see those kinds of things in a church, you realize they're not, their first affection is not the gospel.
Right.
It's not Christ. It's these other things. And that's, again, something the adversary has got them to lay down their idol of Christ and pick up these other idols.
You ever been in any of those churches historically where for those churches who have basically the juice and the wafers or little pieces of bread, and you cover it with the tablecloth, but if you do away with the tablecloth and the way that you fold it during the time, if you don't even, you got to fold it like a flag.
I know. They come down and they fold it like a flag and they cover it. I know. When I grew up, that's what we did we did it once a quarter when I grew up.
But you know the history of the cloth, right?
I know the history of the cloth. But yeah. Why don't you fill us in on
that? No, you're going to tell it.
Well, when I grew up, though, and doing this, I thought that was the only way to do it. I had no idea. I thought it was like in the Bible. But that's how
they exactly they confuse tradition with doctrine.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, the cloth was used in unair-conditioned churches that had flies.
Right.
And so you didn't
want that simple.
You didn't want a fly getting in the juice or
right.
the bread.
Right.
So until time to serve, you covered it with the cloth.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
But it became, oh my goodness, I don't think he folded it right. He's going to hell. And
right.
that became part
right.
of the doctrine of the church.
Right.
And not all churches will understand what we're saying.
No, but boy, those who do.
Yes, they do. You got that right. Okay, number four, they do not want to look like their community. Ooh.
Another way of saying that is they resent their community for being what it is.
Ooh, that's change or die for sure.
I think it was Jared Wilson, who's at Midwestern Seminary, who said, some folks don't really, if we get down to it, some folks don't really care whether the community becomes Christian or not. We just wish they'd live right.
Oh, my goodness.
We just wish they'd act right. So we resent the fact that they don't believe like us and act like us and have our values. And when we begin to resent the community that's around us, that's the death wheeze of a church.
Wow. Yeah, there is some change or die that is in here. Wow. The fifth one is this. They see a recent period of the past as biblically normative. One of the most humorous things that took place was my son Sam went to a church where I served as pastor.
Okay.
And I am the hero of the past. and they have displays of articles of when the church was at its peak and leading in baptisms. And that period is frozen at that church that is dying.
Yeah.
That is dying.
But that's where their
hero days for, I was about to say for better or worse, is probably for worse, were Tom Rainer's pastor days. Mm-hmm. And so the late 80s became the days that if we could just get back to those days. Well, I tell you what, if Tom Rainer was there, he wouldn't take them to those days because they're not effective anymore.
That's right. And when you go to a dying and declining church, there is a period that they can look to that say that was it. That's when we were, you know. And I'd also say, tell me about a time when things were really happening here. And this right on the tip of their tongue. They know exactly. Even if they weren't there then,
they
know
the
corporate history and they know that. And they look back to that. And they look back to that in a very, you know, longing kind of way, rather than realizing God has something very powerful for them in store tomorrow if they would just embrace it.
One of the photos that they have in that memory collection at the church is the worship center is just packed. I mean, you can hardly move. And the pictures there is as that was normal.
Mm-hmm.
That was friend day.
That was friend day.
the current invite your one day. But we weren't always.
I risk so much in telling this story. Because we have quite a reach on this podcast, right?
Yes, we do.
We do coast to coast and all the ships at sea. So
we hit most nations now.
Do we?
Yes.
I was on Jason Allen, the president of Midwestern Seminary's podcast some time ago. And Jason had come to Warnell and preached church I replanted while I was there. But the Sunday he preached, we had several congregations meeting in our building, right? Mm-hmm. Haitian and others. And so the Sunday the president of the seminary comes to preach, I invited those congregations to join us, and they were eager to do it. And so when he comes, instead of having our normal 150, I mean, it was probably, you know, could have been 250, there was quite a few because we had these other congregations joining with us. And so when I was on his podcast and he was talking about my church and he talked about how many languages were in my church and how many people were there on Sunday morning, I didn't want to correct him. So
just let it be.
Just let it be. So that wasn't the norm. That was an unusual, kind of like your picture. That was an unusual day. So my point in all that is, even what they remember isn't probably what happened. That's my point.
That photo is an accurate photo, but it was an anomaly.
Yes. And Jason Allen's picture of my church, our church that Sunday morning, was an accurate picture, but it was not what was normally going on. So in their minds, in the history always is better than it probably was. And you look at the one pastor like you that they had, that they kind of memorialized and stuff. The longer he's been gone, the greater he is, right?
Oh, yeah, because I was a terrible pastor, quite frankly. I mean, I had the pastoral skills of Attila the Hun. I mean, I was, in terms of preaching, average at best.
Yeah.
And that's not false humility.
Right.
I mean, I do not get invited to preaching conferences for a reason. but their memory.
That's right.
And by the way, the church was on the way to death.
Mm.
It was down. 118 is not a small number, and I remember 118 because you might know I have a memory of numbers.
That's right.
But when I came in, the previous year's worship attendance was 118.
Right.
But it had been much, much higher. I don't remember its peak. And so, quite frankly, I went through a period of easy reclamation growth.
People just bringing some people back.
Back, mm-hmm. Yes. So they remembered me for a lot of the wrong reasons. They thought I was this great turnaround, and basically great turnaround leader, and basically it was just, you know, some easy low-hanging fruit.
But the point of that is dying churches have a memory of going back to a place when they were growing as though that's what the future will be like.
Yes.
And the point is, no.
Yes.
First, it probably wasn't that good to begin with. And the picture you have in your mind is probably an anomaly to some degree. But secondly, what God has in store for you tomorrow is even greater because it's real and it's here. And numerically, it may not be as good, but the community's changed and you may have a better gospel impact than you could ever imagine. But you can't compare today to yesterday.
There you go.
You compare today to what God wants you to do today.
So the point that we're making is churches either change or die. You don't change the gospel.
No.
But you change the methodologies. You change what you need to do to reach people. You do become all things to all people so that you may reach some without changing what is truth. And that's the point here. And we wanted to talk about some of the way churches do choose to die. Always thank you, North American Mission Board. Thank you, churchreplanters.com, for being our sponsor, or really for just being this podcast. It's an incredible opportunity to be in a strategic relationship partnership with the North American Mission Board and churchreplanters.com. Thanks for joining us. Find your favorite podcasting app. And whether it's iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever it is, give us a rating and review. Please take the time to do that. And we offer this podcast as a free resource for you. And if you can just help us to keep it going by doing that, we would appreciate it. And always thank you for being a part of Revitalize and Replant, where we're helping churches revitalize, replant, and get healthier together.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer. If you'd like to learn more about re-energizing your church to reach your community, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Play or in your favorite podcasting app. For additional resources on church leadership and to join the conversation online, visit TomRainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.